This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil, now streaming, only on Hulu.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the, must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
Citizens of the Reject Nation, Coy will be back with us in person next week, but right now, he's zooming in. Coy, how you doing, buddy?
So excited to be back in a few days. You cannot even believe I miss the world and I miss the X-Men with you, Greg.
Well, you'll be back here for a live stream this Saturday. Maybe Coy's going to be doing a solo one. Either way, my friend, we got to hop into business here because we got the penultimate episode coming at us right now.
I think we got three or four episodes, Greg.
I got my math wrong. I'm thinking of a different show. Ladies and gentlemen, leave your thoughts down below on what you thought about this episode. Coy, you ready?
So ready.
All right, let's do it. All right, my friends. An episode that was so much about dealing with how to grieve and how everyone grieves differently. But you know what I don't want you guys to grieve about? Not getting your brand new To My Walkman, X-Men inspired Professor X in a giant Walkman with headphones on, listening to the animated theme song. I love this t-shirt. It's coming in the mail. I can't wait for all the gents here to be rocking it, whichever ladies decide to wear it as well. And seriously, please go ahead and if you get one, tag us on social media. We would love to share it. It always is. At WonderCon, Coy, what flipped us out the most? When we bumped into people wearing the RR apparel. That was the thing that flipped us out the most. Absolutely.
Yeah. Every time I saw someone in the wild, I had to run up and hug them. Some of them expected it.
Some of them did not. Saw some people in the crowd, and they didn't stick around afterwards. Anyway.
We wanted photos.
I wanted the photos. I don't think they wanted the photos. Hey, guys. All righty. So, wow. Okay. Another great episode. Yes, dealing with loss in different ways. Grief is a very powerful, poignant subject, one that the X-Men must deal with on a consistent basis for the legacy of the lives that these guys lead. And I thought it was another great one. Now, Coy, listen, I'm going to let you just talk about what you got to talk about. Who the hell is that at the end? Who's that?
Bastion. Okay. I was like, why OZT? And I didn't put it together because in the comics, it's kind of the other order. Bastion's responsible for Operation Zero Tolerance. Operation Zero Tolerance is one of the most powerful runs in the comic books. It deals with like the Scott Lobdell run from like 93 to 98. It's while this is set is when this character comes to play. It's when I really got back into comics, and Operation Zero Tolerance was so scary. This guy's like responsible for the Friends of Humanity in some ways. He's like behind a lot of the covert groups, and what he is basically like the Master Mold and Nimrod form him. Like it's like this sentience that comes out of the Master Mold being destroyed and Nimrod become this thing to survive, and he's the last bastion of hope for humanity to take out the mutants. This character comes back a few different times in the Messiah complex and stuff, and basically at one point, one of my favorite storylines is he tries to save mutant kind so he can be the one to end it himself later. Like he's that dude. Bastion is insane. It's such a fun character because it's like an almost human Sentinel, but in a way that the lack of humanity is more scary. And Theo James, dude. That was Theo James.
Theo James?
Like the Theo James of like the gentleman and like, you know, the
Divergent
stuff. Yeah, yeah. Theo James is Bastion. If my ears did not deceive me, I heard a rumor he was in the show, and then like three sentences in, I think the reaction of the show.
Is he British?
Oh yeah, but I mean the gravel of his voice and like the clipped, but like the whole episode, I kept being like OZT, like what? And then as soon as we saw him, just the purple and the playing One Eyed One Earl, I was like oh! And then I just that was dude, Bastion on a show is amazing.
That's incredible, man.
And then Easter egg wise, I want to give some love. I don't know if this is as intentional as it felt, but I think it kind of has to be. I think Rogue was doing all of her moves from Capcom 92.
Oh, really?
Like, because she did that, like, spinny
and the
ball thing.
Oh, yeah, you
and
know
the kick,
what?
That long
yeah.
Kick, was that not the Capcom fighting
style? Yeah, I think you're right about that.
I'm just here to earn my hours, okay? Because I'm pretty sure that was Capcom
is
92.
That, you might be right on the money about that. Damn.
So I geeked out throughout this episode, but I was also like, I think, and I want to run it by
you
right
even
before I just yell it out.
You could even see like Rogue versus, like you can
right?
kind of see them.
And then she does, because it was that long kick where the foot was super extended. I think that's Capcom, dude.
Oh, shit. Yeah, man. Oh.
Because Cyclops fought with some Capcom moves in that first episode where he was using the optic blast like to move the Z-axis and like to skitter around. I think this team is huge Capcom fans.
Dude, now the action is making even more sense to me. I never put that together this entire time.
They're fighting like the game.
But my mind is now going back to when I would like play Marvel versus Capcom and going, oh, it'd be so cool if they move like this. You know, and like being a kid thinking that. And now.
And it's so exciting.
Now they're doing it. And I didn't even put it together till right now. You might be right about that.
And it's the characters we knew from them, but the animation couldn't be that good yet. Like, it's just animation caught up to Capcom. And then the Bastion thing, like, this episode blew me away. Top to bottom, I kept being enthralled. And then, like, we'll talk about all the relationships and stuff, but just those two elements, what a show.
What a great show. Yeah, I thought this was actually really tense. And it was kind of crazy because I thought, oh, man, how dark are they going to go with Rogue here succumbing to the grief this far? And is there going to be a divide with the X-Men? Like, because when after Rogue drops Trask, and because I was shocked, like, oh my God, she just straight up murdered this guy. She just killed this guy. And everyone's like, what is this what we do now? What did you do, Rogue? And then Wolverine's like, yeah, that's what he freaking deserved. And if the president doesn't,
he does not drop Trask.
And then Trask comes back as Prime Trask. So then it completely changes everything. You didn't catch the Stark Tower, though, Koi.
I'm sorry. I was busy catching other awesomeness.
That's my street cred, as I saw something in the background, and I went, boom. I know that from many a movie. it was really cool.
I did notice a very subtle Easter egg. I believe Captain America appeared in this episode.
Was that Captain America?
I think that was Steven Rogers.
It's cool to honor that, you know, because I know that season 5 is often the season that people complain about when it comes to the X-Men animated show, rightfully so. A lot of changes happened that they didn't want to have change. But a standout episode was the one where they go into Wolverine's past when there's this episode where he like goes to the graveyard and he's reminiscing on the past about someone who he thought like betrayed him, but actually didn't. But the whole thing was like an adventure that he had with Captain America, and now it's Captain America. I can't imagine this is the last we'll see of Captain America. Hopefully, at least.
He's looking for a shield for the rest of
the that should be the post-credit scene. Like, where did she put that damn shield? Just like digging through
he
this
He goes
stuff.
Back to being frozen
stuck
with
in
the shield.
Yeah. That'd be pretty funny. So I liked seeing him back there. And, Gambit, for sure, dead. There's got to be a reversal of sorts
so
to
heavy.
Happen. There has to be a reversal of sorts, right? Because, like, Cable's coming into the fray. It is cool seeing this get paid off with Cable because, like I said, Cable was in the original show, and I guess they might have had, like, minor hints that he was.
But now they're, like, dad?
Yeah.
Like they said it, and I was like, and the family with Rogue and Nightcrawler. I loved the adopted sister conversation. The elements of family are always incredible with X-Men, but there's something about this show, and I will say it's incredible to have people that are working on the show watch us talk about it. I talked to Charlie last week after she saw our reaction to the episode, and it was so funny to be aware of how much they love X-Men and how much we love X-Men, but they have power. And so it's really funny to have the difference of like, yeah, but you're shaping the X-Men and we're just excitedly yelling like, oh, I can't believe they're doing that. And the Capcom thing feels like our generation of X-Men fans going like, but now we're the suits and it's time to make things. And that's what this kind of felt like to me was all the things that writers would have been watching as children. Why isn't Cable talking about blah, blah, blah? Why isn't Rogue? Like this episode felt like it was very deserved payoff, not just for this season, but for 5 seasons of, oh, it's coming. And I love that Bastion, said, in 92, like that would be his continuity 5 years ago. And those moments mixed with the family moments feel like the writers on this show watched this as a kid and they wanted to hear these conversations. And now we're getting them.
Exactly. No, I think they're absolutely paying everything off in a way that it does feel cathartic for us as audience members. And I feel like we gotta like now that you said that sometimes I watch our shit, now I'm like, we have to criticize something so we don't sound like we're kissing ass.
Because it's a good thing we hate this show because they're watching. There was a couple moments where I could have had a couple more punches, I guess.
Now you're just nitpicking, Coy.
Yeah.
Now you just want to be a hater. Punches. You're just trying to get. You're just trying to get. You're just saying that for views, Coy. You're just saying that for views.
I really don't know what I'd change about this episode. Like, I think the only episode of the entire series so far is I would have split Mojoverse and Life Death, and that's it, because everything else before and after it, the pacing is magnificent, the tension they're able to get in an animated show, the acting out of these actors from beyond like drawings that I feel this tension and this pain and this remorse, the moments where they had the pupils dilating, the scene with, we haven't even talked about Sunspot coming out, and
that was what I was thinking about.
What a beautiful about. 20 seconds of like, oh, love, oh, the world.
Yeah, because I was thinking, oh, this is cool. They're doing like the subverting expectations in a way. Because Sunspot.
Double subvert.
You probably have way more vested interest in him because of your familiarity with him in the comics and such. And that's been one of my little criticisms is, while there's a lot of greatness in this show, he's been a character that has just been fine to me. As we've been progressing through X-Men 97. And then this episode did give that springboard to something that I feel like makes him a more compelling, more interesting character to watch now with this complexity he's having with his mom. And that moment itself I thought was treated so well because we've seen it so many times, even when, like, for a character that upon introduction was sort of reflecting the introduction of Jubilee in some ways in the first episode and how in the first episode of X-Men, Jubilee's parents are like, what do we do with this thing? You know, and I thought, oh, we're doing something different. Cool. They're going to be accepting. This is interesting. And then, never mind. It's kind of it's a thwarted way of like we like you, but no one else will, you know?
Yeah. This is okay in quiet times. Yeah. In private. Like,
which
that,
is
and
more
that's so
insidious.
Real and cold.
Yeah.
Like, that's so I know people that way. And that's more awful. Yeah. It's more insidious. And I think that this show, I like the pacing allowing for scenes like that to not feel shoehorned in.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I love that they talk about, you know, the scene with Iceman and X-Men, like the old Bryan Singer movies. I was always like, whoa, that's crazy they're doing that.
Yeah.
But like, that's in a 2-hour movie. I love that this show feels like it's appropriate to have just 20 minutes of dialogue in a cartoon about action.
Yeah. And I think there's so much strength here that I think might even go a little bit unnoticed. You know, like I like the scene with Beast and Trish quite a bit. Mm-hmm. There's this great arc in, one of the best episodes of the original X-Men series is Beast helps a blind woman gain her sight again, and the two of them fall in love with each other but can't be together because I forget what the character's name is, but can't be together because of, you know, like they won't accept us, yada yada yada, you know, important thing, little things like that. And here, you know, you see him blushing over Trish in the prior episode, but the emotion, the toll of this divide is becoming so strong that even here he's pushing her away,
once she's being more vulnerable, even to the point where she's like, "No, get the cameras out of here. This is a private thing between you and I." And even there, he's Beast himself is like having a reluctancy in connecting with a human in that moment, you know, which is so the. Like Beast is the one who's usually the one championing for such a thing, right?
And he's like, you know, the short-sighted dream of Xavier, like, oh, thanks for tolerating us. And that's why I was so mad at myself for not catching. He kept saying tolerance, and then there was like OZT, and I was like, God damn it, this is literally Operation Zero Tolerance. Like, it's such a formative arc for this 90s X-Men era. And I also really like that the Cyclops stuff is not as much from this era, but it's later, but it feels appropriate with Genosha. Like, the Cyclops Was Right stuff is 2000s, and I really feel like they're going there. I love the stuff with, you know, how humanity is being viewed and mutants and their relationship and that tension causing Cyclops to break. Him basically, like, in front of Jean being like, there's another telepath. Madeline? Like, the dude is not being subtle. And then, the you know, the cable of it all, like, all of that is such fascinating dynamics for the psychology of Jean, who's also having to deal with this, cope with this, absorb this, and be like, yeah, we've been through stuff before, you know, when I became that giant firebird, but this is somehow worse.
Yeah, and I like how Nightcrawler is being served in a way where he's like the spiritual and emotional mentor for the group. Because, like, he came back, and I remember being so excited, but I didn't feel like they'd really did much with him, and now he's in the opening credits, and now they're really solidifying the role that he really serves here, you know? I'm waiting to see what they do with Morph. I want to see a little bit more of, because, like, Morph hasn't really had much characterization.
I think Morph and Sunspot will have big moments in the final three where they'll do something to pay off them being around and just being, like, quippy and leaving.
Sure. Like, Morph and Wolverine both, you know, haven't really... Wolverine's got more than Morph for sure. But
I mean, I said it in the episode, I'm really proud of Marvel for not making this Wolverine and the X-Men like the movies do. Like, it shows restraint to go, hey, we're going to bring back that property everyone's waited 30 years for. And that character that got really popular, he's a side character and he's going to stay there. Like, that's incredibly bold to not have Wolverine like, I'm the guy. Like, I've been so impressed at their restraint. And I think that it's going to make the new live action better for it, because now people are going to be more aware that Wolverine isn't the be-all end-all. He's a great character, but I think people's expectations, if they're enjoying 97, will be like, oh, it's a team show.
Yeah,
and the movies can be team dynamic.
I think people will now be really excited at the prospect of, I mean, X-Men First Class proved that you can do X-Men movies without Wolverine. you know, still, like, the appeal of Xavier and Magneto, the two other biggest ones. And this show really showcases that the whole ensemble can be very compelling. I really love it, man. I really love it. Another 10 out of 10 for me.
I do worry Gambit staying dead because of Emma Frost, by the way.
Oh, yeah, the Emma Frost moment, yeah.
Because she came back and they did the diamond and all of her second evolution. And dude, I'm going to try to find, like, a limited 20 comics for you. I know you haven't read as much of the new X-Men stuff, but there's some really great Emma Frost diamond stuff.
I haven't read any of the new X-Men stuff.
I was trying to give you some grace.
Well, no, I'm not going to lie my way through it. I haven't read any of the new stuff.
But the diamond stuff, there's some really fascinating uses of Emma Frost and basically, like, a three-way relationship situation with Jean, Scott, and Emma. And I'm wondering if they'll even touch on that because of Madeline being gone. But also, with Emma coming back, that shows everyone else's death feels more final. So I'm wondering if Gambit does stay dead.
They needed something to be. I mean, I think the creators are, if they have to, they have to earn it back in some way.
It can't just come back with Cable like, hey, Mon Ami.
Yeah, I did it. I did it. Because it did wipe out a lot of characters. You know, they wiped out, like, Hellfire Club. They wiped out, they saw Shaw, the Morlocks. Wiped out a lot of people. So I imagine some characters will still come back, unless they want to just be that bold and just wipe some of them off the board entirely.
Well, there's between 1 and 8 episodes left, according to Greg, so we'll see what time they have left to bring back characters.
I lost count. Another solid episode, in my opinion. I loved it. Thank you to all who have already gone over to RejectNationShop.com and bought yourself 5 shirts of the same one. And it's really kind of you. Really, really kind of you. Look at you right now. Putting in your credit card info, using your PayPal, just going to buy
one for Theo James. He's an X-Men.
Buy one for Theo James. Get a Super Marvel Bro shirt. All right, Coy. Well, thank you for being here, my friend. And
Saturday,
Coy will be back.
Live stream.
He'll be in the clear.
Getting after it.
See you, Reject Nation. Peace out.